Thank you, Nick, and happy to be here. I will start with my disclosure to tell you I have no relationships to disclose. So I'm going to be describing a process by which the Massachusetts Bureau of Substance Abuse Services, which I will refer to as BSAS, conducted a lengthy process to assess in what ways they might alter their purchase of residential recovery services. And this included broad public input, focus groups, and feedback. So just as background, the annual expenditure for residential recovery services in Massachusetts is more than $32 million. That represents about 30% of the overall BSAS budget. There are 67 contracts, more than 2,000 beds, FY13 admissions, almost 7,000. That includes some duplications, readmissions. The actual number of individuals is just under 6,000. So the last procurement of this service was in 2003, and that had not resulted in any big changes in the system. And we thought with this procurement expiring, it was an opportunity to really think about how we offered services. The other important component was that in 2008, a new law in Massachusetts required provider and consumer input for all new procurements. So BSAS determined to conduct a really transparent and open process and provide a lot of opportunities for input. We had focus groups throughout the state. We reported back to focus group participants on what the findings were. Developed a model for recovery residential recovery services out of that process, and then also sought public input on that model. Before we launched that public process, though, BSAS established an internal work group that really looked at what was happening in the system today and considered questions about what should we really change. For example, one of the questions considered was, should we have a tiered system to accommodate more severely needy clients? We knew that the number of people with mental health histories had increased from about 40 to 60% over 10 years. The percentage of people on psych meds had increased from about 35 to over 50%. And we knew that that was an under-reporting because it was simply data from the enrollment. But when we looked at the numbers, we realized that people were really being served throughout the system. And while their relapse and administrative discharge rates were greater than those without co-occurring disorders, as far as we knew, there wasn't huge differences. In other words, we were looking at data and literature to ask, are there compelling reasons for us to alter the framework of the existing system, which would be a big upheaval? And we really did not find any reasons to make a big change. But we did determine that it would be important to raise the bottom line for everybody. Since everybody was serving a complex population, we really needed to make sure that every program could do that. So over the course of this year, BSAS determined to define the principles that should guide the service and what that should mean. Now, a lot of what was included in this is also already in regulation or other requirements, but we felt that we needed to restate it and we needed to be more explicit about what it meant. The first principle was that recovery happens in a social context and in relationships in a community. So a residential program needed to facilitate interaction among the residents, both by physical layout and by communal meetings, morning meetings, communal meals, house meetings. And we also wanted to ensure safety for residents with 24/7 awake staff, a regulation that needed to be restated. We defined the purpose of the service as to develop life skills for successful recovery. We made a distinction between a recovery service and a clinical service, and this residential rehab in Massachusetts was viewed as a recovery service. People could be in a program and also be involved in an outpatient behavioral mental health or substance abuse treatment, which was a change. previously that had not been permitted. So the life skills really was, you know, developing a capacity care for oneself, having a schedule, wellness like exercise, also tobacco cessation, conflict resolution, individualized services, ensuring aftercare planning, and recovery support. The last principle we defined was that a program, residential program, should model best practices and quality improvement. Again, there are regulations governing this, but we thought it needed to be restated. That program should have a mechanism for quality improvement that included consumer input and feedback. We stated that staff should receive supervision from individuals with a demonstrated competence in the 12 core functions of addiction counseling. Now, that was very deliberately phrased in a kind of vague way, because this was a big question we really wanted to get public feedback on. Massachusetts general law that established the authority of BSAS to license programs specifically prohibited establishment of licensing regulations requiring educational, basic educational requirements for what was then halfway house staff. We got a ruling that we knew we could not establish that in regulation, but it was determined we could establish an educational requirement in a purchase contract. And the last bit was we wanted to ensure that programs maintained active links with other service providers. So I wanted to say also that those three slides and that process was presented at the beginning of every one of our focus groups, and we asked participants for feedback. And basically people said, sounds good. There was no argument. So we had 11 focus groups, three groups with providers of service, one with criminal justice partners, one with family members and partners, our consumer advisory board, licensing inspectors, and we had four groups with current and former residents. We had more than 60 current and former residents participating, and the groups were held throughout the state. All the groups were recorded and all were transcribed in the family, partner, and consumer groups. Numbers were used to identify speakers rather than names, and all the transcripts were analyzed. So I'm going to give you a report of the findings based on the questions that we asked and the themes that emerged in five or more groups. The first question was, we asked who was served well. And there was strong agreement that people who are motivated are served well. That was defined as people who were sick and tired of being sick and tired on one end of the spectrum, and others talked about people who are in the contemplation stage of change. Homeless individuals were thought to be served well, primarily because they were given a place to stay, but also there were relatively good outcomes to stable housing for homeless individuals. Not great, because the resources weren't there, but relatively good. Also, I should say the numbering of these just represents the order of importance. So if there's two twos, as there are here, that's a tie. Specialized programs were thought to be good. We have programs for pregnant and parenting women, transitional age youth, and young adults, and for linguistic and ethnic groups. And finally, individuals in the criminal justice system were thought to do well because they came with good documentation and they were required to stay. Who could we serve better was a very important question for us. And not many surprises, but some insight. Persons with co-occurring disorders. You know, on some of these questions, you'll see that providers and consumers identify the same issue, but see it from different points of view. So providers thought that persons with co-occurring disorders just basically were difficult to manage, often difficult to integrate into the population, sometimes causing imbalance in the house. Consumers felt that if they had a co-occurring disorder, nobody wanted them. They met barriers to intake and to getting into to programs. The second theme was that persons on medication of any kind could be served better, and that included medication for physical health problems. Providers found the management of medication to be enormously time-consuming and labor-intensive. Consumers felt that if they were on any medication, they had trouble getting into a house, that there was a barrier. Young adults were identified as a population not served well, found to be difficult to integrate into an adult population, which is primarily what the system was. Massachusetts is doing a lot to build a separate system for young adults. Persons specifically on methadone or Suboxone emerged as a theme separate from the general medication issue. Some of the labor intensity issues were the same for providers, getting people to clinics for their doses, negotiating exception requests for take-homes. But the, I think the consumers described a continuing encountering a continuing prejudice against medication-assisted treatment, and that they found it very difficult to get into the into programs. Also of concern was the reports about that gay men and transgendered individuals did not feel well served. We've certainly been very aware of the need to build the capacity of the system to respond to transgendered individuals. And this part of this issue to us was really staff development and professional development, helping staff be savvy and comfortable in responding appropriately to gay men and transgendered individuals. So we asked also, how could the system account for different needs of different consumers? And the underlying theme in this was individualized service, an individualized assessment that individuals that the client participated in, also related to goals and the plan developed by the residents. Consumers described two different experiences. On the one hand, feeling that they were heard, their words were written down in the assessment in the plan, and on the other hand, feeling that a form was filled out, they were asked to sign it. So although we require individualized services, we felt we really would need to emphasize that. Flexibility about length of stay is really a also individualized. So admission and discharge criteria, how could that be fairer? There was a very helpful suggestion that applicants should have more thorough information about the program before admission. And in fact, we built that in to the model to have to try to develop some website through BSS where people could find out what a program looked like, what were the rules, you know, who goes there. Specialized programs were thought to be helpful and felt providers should have better continuum of care linkages. So one of the big questions for us, again, was the establishment of educational or experience requirements. And so we had not specified a credential, but in the focus groups it became very clear that a credential was what people wanted. Unfortunately, there was no agreement as to what credential that should be. But that was fine. You know, we could figure we could solve that. But it was a big change for the system. And we also wanted it to be a separate, you know, not the program director. Professional development in place for all staff. And there was a feeling staff, especially among consumers, that staff should have some experience in recovery. But professional development and supervision are critical. So what came out throughout those questions also was this cross-question theme of the importance of case management. And in fact, case management is what programs do, but that had never been specified in an RFR, nor had it been described. And one of the things we wanted to come out of this process with was a fair rate for residential providers, and one that reflected what they actually do. And this was a really helpful finding for us to establish defined case management as a component of the system. So that was the general findings of the focus group. After everything was analyzed, we invited all participants to an afternoon forum where we presented the findings and got their feedback. And everyone said, yep, that's what we said. So the new model specified individualized assessment. We made much clearer provisions about medication and about the initiation of aftercare planning at the beginning. of service. We defined case management as a component of the service. We required a master's level clinician as the clinical supervisor as a separate position, requiring professional development plan for staff, and included a provision for developing a central resource for people to find out about programs. We posted that model on the web, soliciting additional input. And interestingly, for the first time, a group of providers recommended differentiation among the three philosophies of treatment, social model, a recovery home, and therapeutic community. Another group of providers said, no, don't do that. And there was also the question of differentiating by cohort, severity. So that was one of the big feedback. Another was a request for clearer staffing ratios. But the overall feedback was the model is quite comprehensive and the focus on serving individuals with co-occurring issues and providing trauma-informed care is critical. We actually did specify provisions for co-occurring disorders and trauma-informed care in the new description of the model. And I like the summary. I feel it is fine just the way it is. So BSS declined to differentiate philosophies. We incorporated proportional staffing and provided a detailed report of the RFI comments and the BSS response. So the final model incorporated both the BSS study and work group determinations, as well as the thoughts, suggestions, and experience of consumers, their families and partners, the service providers, and this was all done through multiple feedback loops. Where we are now is that the final model was submitted to the Massachusetts Center for Healthcare Information and Analysis, and that center will take the model, the regulatory requirements, and the provider uniform financial reports to develop the rate. I wish I could tell you now we know what that is, but it hasn't happened yet. So all in all, we felt that what we learned was that not a lot was wrong with the system, and what needed improvement was certainly within our scope of achieving. So thank you very much.